It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. This week, it's me, Ben Ostro, Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, and Pat Weber. So let's jump right in with a few quick takes from the crew, and we'll start off with Mark.
Slow down. Slow down if you're a high school official. Slow down if you're an NFL official. We saw this happen in the Buffalo and Cincinnati game. There was a run by the Bills for an apparent touchdown, a flag down for offensive holding. Simple. Holding takes the touchdown off the board. Holding, offense, 10 yards, repeat the down, walk it off, and hack it in. But wait a minute. It was a touchdown. Touchdowns are automatically reviewed by the replay official. And we had a fumble near the goal line. So now there could be a worst rule in sports with a fumble over the goal line and out the back of the end zone. Well, they didn't, the officiating crew didn't stop for that review. And the Bengals actually had to challenge the play. So they had to use one of their challenges to take a look. Now, it turned out that the ball went out of bounds in the field of play. No fumble out the back of the end zone. It all came out in the wash. But it's one of those things where if an official and the crew slows down and walks through the play, they'll be able to get to the right place. It happened to me in a high school game. I had a double foul after a change of possession. I was ready to go through with an enforcement, and the crew said, wait a minute, both fouls came after change of possession. Ah, now I have to throw three layers on top of that. We got to the right point. Slow down. Walk yourself through the play, and you'll get to the right place. It happens. It happens to the best of them.
And that's one of the things when you have maybe one of the crew members that's zipping ahead, it's always good to be in there as that check. Even if you think that you might be wrong, just slowing down the process is enough to just regroup, make sure we're getting this right. Yes, the pace of the game is a concern, but you know, also getting it completely right is the utmost concern. Pat Weber, over to you.
Yeah, piggybacking a little bit on what Mark said, I felt like the various replay booths and the command center in New York certainly got their money's worth and earned their keep over the weekend. Several interesting reviews around the league. I thought in the Green Bay Chicago one, the review that overturned a fumble to an incomplete was really tight, could have gone a number of ways. We saw on the Sunday night game in Alan X's crew, the replay assist got a replay assist, which was interesting to see. And then there's a couple of interesting or controversial ones, depending on who you ask, in the Pittsburgh Steelers and Baltimore Ravens game, especially on the potential Isaiah Likely touchdown. Overall, I thought all the reviews were correct, but certainly saw some fun ones around the league.
The one that was really interesting was there was a dual possession in right here in Jacksonville with against the Colts, and they ruled it Jacksonville ball, so a turnover to the defense based on basically that he didn't control the ball long enough. And watching some of the replay reviews, it's okay, yeah, he did control it. However, in all these situations, the ball disappears from view. So we cannot establish control as being met all the way through. And when we have, we'll start, before we get to simultaneous possession, we have joint possession, two players with the hands on the ball at the same time. It goes to the one that started to control the ball first. Then in that process, if somebody loses control, the other player, if they have maintained continuous control, their catch process starts from when they started to control the ball. And we'll get into a little bit more of that catch idea later on. And if it is a true tie, both of them controlling the ball at the same time, the tie does go to the offensive player. That's the same for any kind of loose ball, whether it be a fumble, backward pass, or a pass. Cam, let's send it over to you.
So we got into a situation where we can be reminded as football fans that a runner can go down on his own, not giving himself up, just falling, tripping. And there's a way he can be down by contact without actually having his body be touched. And it was an interesting play that we saw in the Cincinnati and Buffalo game. If we go back to that one, it had been mentioned earlier. Snow game, you know, love to see those. It's that time of year. And Bills running back Ty Johnson broke out a big run, but slipped in the snow and slid for a few extra yards. So he's not down by contact at that point. He was not giving himself up. He wasn't sliding, diving. So he has the opportunity to get back up and keep running. But actually, the safety for the Bengals, Geno Stone, thought it was a great opportunity to try to rip the ball out while the running back, Johnson, was on the ground. And he was able to rip the ball out, and it advanced a couple yards and tried to fall on it, but the officials killed the play. So Ty Johnson was running. He fell on his own, didn't give himself up, and was never, his body was never touched by an opponent. The opponent touched the ball, but we still killed the play. Little known rule, and this doesn't happen very frequently, but this was a correct ruling, and it's something that we can think of, and you know, something that we can say, hey, you know, remember that time that that happened, and talk about that in the future. Something you may not think is part of the rule book, but you know, touching the ball when the player is on the ground that has not yet been ruled down by contact. Sometimes, you know, it's difficult to tell if in that action of touching the ball, you know, the defender grazes the fingers of the ball carrier or grazes the wrist. It's really minute, and getting into replay with something like that can be really parsing out, you know, frames and angles that we really don't want to get into. So as long as that player has firm control of the ball when they're on the ground, even if they have not yet been ruled down by contact, making contact with the ball puts them down as well. It's a weird one, but, you know, something that we should consider moving forward, think about it, and not forget it. If this ever happens in the future, we can say, hey, remember that happened? You can think of that as an example. I'm the king of thinking of examples that happened 10, 12 years ago that are random in a random second quarter of a week 7 game that didn't really mean anything. But this was a little interesting, little quirk in the rules for those of you that love those types of things.
And when it came up in our instant message channel, first thing that popped in my mind was a media tape by Dean Blandino. So that's got to be over 10 years ago. And it's funny how you record certain things in your brain. I cannot remember the circumstance of the game that it came in. I think I do. And I think it was Buffalo again. But the situation was, yeah, you do not know. And it's impossible to tell if there was any contact with the player. And as we've established, it just takes a graze of that player to put them down by contact if they are already on the ground and having not been touched. So something like that. And it's not too terribly often that you have a player that goes down on their own without surrendering their advance. But when you put a nice little slick layer of snow on the field, all sorts of things can happen. I just want to return to catches really briefly. Talked about it quite significantly, but it's coming up again and again. And it, back to that Steelers game with the Ravens. And we had at the end of the game, you know, some discussion with the a pool report with Mark Butterworth, the replay vice president, and trying to compare the denied touchdown on Isaiah Likely to the interception turned into self-reception for Aaron Rodgers. And basically he caught the ball and had his knee down. And so then that was ruled a catch and down by contact at that point. Then the ball came loose. But the one refrain that keeps coming up, and we have to kind of, I guess, you know, keep in mind that people are not processing it the way officials do, which is, it's that those two steps are at the front, which is control, 2 feet down, or another body part other than the hand. That is what establishes the catch. Now to establish possession is you got to hold onto it long enough. And so the meter of time is to at least try to make a football move or an act come into the game or have the time to do so. So if you just stand there for long enough, yeah, that you're going to count that out to, okay, good, he's done. In Isaiah Likely's case, there was a question whether he was reaching the ball, but the thing is, he was already reaching in the earlier steps of the process. So it has to be after those first two. Now you go to the third step of the process. And in his case, since he was in stride, we needed to see a third step come down. Any other football move, but that's going to be the one that's more common. And in the case of Aaron Rodgers, he's not in stride. He's going towards the ground. So he secures the ball. He goes and his knees hit the ground. Now he's down by contact. He survived the ground. The ball comes out later. So it wasn't the impact of the ground that dislodged the ball. And so we just got to keep rehashing this because it will constantly come up on social media. What about this? What about this? Two disparate plays, but people will compare them as if they are the same. So let's jump into a couple of our big topics this week. It's the end of the high school season. College football is entering their extended postseason, and we have bowl games coming up. So let's quickly, how do we put our gear in mothballs? What do we do at the end of the season? And Mark, you're 2 years in as a white hat. Compare it to your previous seasons when you were an umpire.
Well, it's kind of a melancholy season, a time of season that you walk out and you do your last game. And I did my game after 10 weeks, and I'm thinking, man, 42 weeks, and I have to wait for 42 weeks. So I get the crew together. We talk about what went well, what we could improve, individual goals we have next year. Individual goals and also crew goals, maybe some things we can work on. And that's how we do it as a crew. Personally, I come in the house, wash all my uniforms, I put them away. Well, I hang them up because you never know if somebody needs a substitute referee for a playoff game for a crew, for another crew. It stays up for a couple weeks. One final thing I do is I soak my whistle in vinegar. That gets all the gunk out of it, all the Gatorade and the half-chewed hot dogs from halftime out of it. I'll get all that out and give it one final ceremonial blast and put it in my bag. That's my little ritual. But yeah, it's a melancholy time. Go through what happened, what went well with the crew. And to be quite honest, though, sometimes first week or two, it's nice not to have to hustle out of work on Friday afternoon, leaving a couple things hanging at the office. That part is nice. But right now, I miss it. When's August?
And that's one of the things. And you know, putting away the gear and all that. And you pickle your whistle and, that sounded a lot different in my head. But anyway, the end of the season rituals that come about there. That's part of the wind down and part of your routine. You know, each week you have the routine, and then this is the end of season routine. Cam, you've done a few white hats in some of the in some other leagues as well, and you're mostly on the wings. But take us through the end of the year.
Yeah. So as I've mentioned in past episodes, we're not even well. Me personally, I'm not even 2 weeks removed from my last game being on Thanksgiving, and we just had our state championships this past weekend. So we're still coming down from the high at the end of the season at this point. But yeah, a lot of the same things that Mark said, you know, unpacking that bag for the last time, allocating all the equipment for next year, and trying to take an inventory of, oh, you know, what do I need to get for next year? What needs to be upgraded next year? You know, I've been using this hat for the last 4 years. Is it time for a new hat? Can I stick it out one more year? Things I think about. But at the same time, another really exciting thing in terms of starting to look forward to next year, even barely the season's over, is I teach the new officials course in my area, and I've already gotten four people that have reached out to me that want to start officiating next year, which is wonderful. We always want to take as many people as we can get. And whenever people are reaching out to me wanting to become officials, the first thing I always include in my response email to them is a message of thanks and saying that, you know, it's not just football. It's not just at the high school level. All levels, all sports are hurting. And it's been that way for a long time. So it's really great to see that, you know, there are people who are willing to put on the stripes and be a part of the solution rather than on the sidelines or in the stands as part of the problem. One of them actually is a Pop Warner coach. And that is really that is particularly exciting to see when a coach wants to start learning how to officiate. And maybe it's, you know, the end of their coaching, their kids have gotten to the age where they're too old enough to play, and they want to move on to the next phase of their football lives, just like their kids are. So, you know, already starting to prepare lectures for our class that starts up in the spring, and it's really an exciting time. I spent most of my weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I forgot Thursday. There was a Thursday night football game on, because Thursday night I was sitting on my couch watching the live stream of the state championships. I was watching some friends of mine that we were able to get assignments, and our Slack was going off with messages, and I'm thinking, what day is it? Oh, there's a Thursday night game on tonight. I'm watching the Massachusetts state championships. But it's an exciting time of year. And Mark, you're totally right. This is the point right now where I'm thinking, wow, this is the first week in months that I have nothing going on in the evening. This is the first time. So it feels good. And I know, Mark, you're ready to get back to it. I think that'll hit me probably just before Christmas in a week or so. It'll be like, yeah, you know, I'm ready. I'm itching again. It doesn't take that long.
An interesting counter programming for the Massachusetts State Championships. Let me run over to Pat there, who's you know, you're still active. You're at the Division III level as well, and so you have a few playoff games, and depending on at that level, depending on how teams advance, depends on whether or not you're done, and so you don't know when you're done until after you're done.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to work a playoff game this past weekend. Pretty good game, and it was a nice sunny 15 degrees at kickoff, which is always fun. But you know, the good thing about cold weather games means that we did something right, and to earn working on a weekend like that. But as you said, Ben, part of our advancement depends on which teams advance, because we can't see teams from our regular season conference, and we can't see teams more than once in the playoffs. So at this point of the bracket, we really need some certain outcomes to go certain ways for us to have a chance at a second game, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, for me, my season's not over until that phone call doesn't come. So we'll be waiting for the next couple of weeks to see what happens.
And Cam mentioned about his officiating courses and his mentorship in that sense. And if Mark or Pat, if you want to jump in with anything that at this stage somebody has kind of become a little interested in things, or maybe you see somebody that's, you know, maybe there's a senior that's graduating. This is, you know, the end of their season, and they're not looking to go on in college. You know, what do we do at this stage to get people involved? What do they do if they're browsing our site, or there's somebody that you come across in your game that is kind of bummed about the end of their football career?
Well, during the season, there have been a couple of players that come up to me and ask me about rules and why did you make that call? And I explain to them the call, and they seem really engaged with it. And later on, I say, Coach, have number 20 see me after the ball game. He comes up to me, and I think he's afraid I'm going to yell at him. And I say, you should consider officiating. You have a real knowledge of the game. It's a great way to stay involved. In the preseason, we go to scrimmages, and I talk to the players about the rule changes, what we're looking for as officials. And I say to them, this is a great way to stay involved. Consider officiating. I've been doing this for 24 years, which is a lot longer than any playing career is going to be. So it's a great way to stay involved in the game. If somebody is interested in becoming an official, contact their local state officiating association in Illinois. It's the Illinois High School Association. Or if you don't still quite know where to go, call your local high school and talk to the athletic director. Ask them, how do we get started officiating? And he'll point you to the right place.
Let's pivot a little to another topic that we've brought up a couple of times in passing, and that's the Pro Football Hall of Fame and officiating. Two things that are water and oil, apparently. In the other halls of fame, other than football, we have the Naismith, the Basketball Hall of Fame has 17 officials in there. Hockey has 16. There's 10 plaques in Cooperstown for umpires. Oddly enough, one of them is also a pro football player. So there's somebody in the Pro Football Hall of Fame who's an umpire, but he got the umpire honor in Cooperstown, and then in Canton he has the other one as a player. But the only one that we have that's a true official completely is Art McNally, and just that one. So we saw the list come out. We didn't see a single official on the longer list. They whittled that down. We now wound up on the coach's side with Bill Belichick, and on the contributor side with Patriots owner Robert Kraft. And how cozy and how wonderful. And so I think we sprained our eyes on rolling them so much, but I'll just open it up to you and, you know, and try and keep it clean.
Now, this from this area, it's more of celebration and rejoicing, a little bit opposite for everywhere else in the country. My family being big Patriots fans, my dad is the biggest. He's already discussed with me a potential trip to Canton next summer, but who knows? He's getting a little ahead of himself. But at the end of the day, there needs to be more officials in Canton. And no disrespect to the late, great Art McNally. We've obviously thrown many, many bouquets at him over the years. He is well-deserving. But it's you really got to think about this. His enshrinement for his contributions were more so for his contributions after he left the field and went into the role as supervisor officiating. We truly don't have an official in the Hall of Fame for his on-field contributions. And, you know, in all the other Halls of Fame, that's exactly what they're for. I've mentioned on past episodes about the what I call the science fair exhibition, the basement level exhibit at the Hall of Fame on officiating, which is woefully inadequate, in my opinion, to lack of more polite terms in my head that I'm thinking of. It needs to be improved. And what more contribution can you have to the game of football than officiating the game of football? Because there is truly no football without officials. I could get on the soapbox about that. But yeah, it's time. None on the shortlist this year. There's usually one or two, but none this year. I hope that means we're not going in a really bad direction.
Yeah, I think there are some people out there who will undoubtedly roll their eyes at the suggestion of officials being in the Hall of Fame. But the reality is all sorts of contributors are enshrined in the Hall of Fame in football, and other sports have gotten it right with officials. They contribute just as much to the sport. And other than players, they're the only ones that are actually all out on the field. And as it's been said, it's time to show the representation in the Hall of Fame as well.
Without officials, it's only recess. And if NFL scouts can get into the Hall of Fame, officials can get into the Hall of Fame.
And we've even advanced our list because the question is, okay, after Art McNally, who really is there? And unfortunately, we lost Jim Tunney last year, who was hoping to get that bid every year. We have Jerry Markbright, who just turned 90. So if you enshrine him, you know, he's, you know, very elder statesman. And, you know, we can't, we missed out on having a speech from Art McNally because of his health, because they waited way too long. He was always on the ballot, but always got denied until that year. To the point of it being a science fair exhibit, we did see the whistle there from Fritz Graf, who is one of our candidates, one of our 19 candidates that we've offered up as a list of potential enshrinees. And from what I heard after Super Bowl 18, somebody from the Hall of Fame asked him for his whistle and he gave it to them and they walked off with it. And knowing that that was the same whistle that was in the ice ball, now I've heard different stories and it's probably lost to history. I've heard that it was Norm Schachter that blew a whistle and it stuck to his lip. I heard that it was Fritz Graf that blew the whistle. Somebody did and left some DNA on that. So we're going to kind of go with what they have there because that's really all they've got. And the one statistic that we've run, if the Pro Football Hall of Fame decides that they're going to enshrine official every 3 years, which seems to be a reasonable pace, and the Baseball Hall of Fame stands pat, which is the next one that's up in line, it would take, on that pace, 27 years for Canton to catch up to even one of the other Halls of Fame. And with that, that's the First and 25 podcast. I'm Ben Ostro for Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, and Pat Weber. We'll catch you next time.